Welcome to Community Forum, a weekly call-in program produced at the studios of KSKA. Opinions expressed are those of the guest, host, and callers, and do not represent the views of KSKA, the licensee, or the underwriters. And now, the host of Community Forum, Nellie Moore.
Only it's not Nellie Moore today. Hello and welcome to Community Forum. I'm Lori Townsend, your guest host today, filling in for Nellie Moore. And today we're talking about the Pebble Mine. Community Forum has been focusing attention during the past two shows on mining issues, speaking with officials from NANA, the NANA Corporation, about the Red Dog Mine 2 weeks ago, and last week with folks from the Renewable Resources Coalition, who favor a ballot initiative on water quality that is currently being reviewed by the Alaska Supreme Court. This program will focus on the Pebble Mine from the perspective of the Pebble Mine Partnership's CEO, Mr. John Shively. And next week, we'll devote Community Forum to Dr. Bruce Switzer, an environmental engineer who has worked for several large mining companies, but is now with the Renewable Resources Coalition and opposes pebble development. The pebble prospect is a big issue with a lot of passion on both sides. You can join our conversation at 550-8433, or if you're out of the Anchorage area, it's 1-888-353-5752. Our guest today, as I said, is John Shively, and John is a former commissioner of the state's Department of Natural Resources. He also worked for the NANA Corporation and Holland America Cruise Lines. Kind of a wide range of things going on there, John. Now, Mr. Shively is heading up the Pebble Partnership. Hello, and welcome to Community Forum, John.
Oh, thanks. Appreciate being here.
Although the Pebble Mine is a topic that some Alaskans are totally immersed in, that's something that's evidenced from the extensive back and forth that we see on blogs related to mining and the news coverage, and there's a lot of advertisements both for and against this proposal. John, first, let's get some basics for listeners who probably or may have heard mention of Pebble but might not have a lot of information about exactly what it is. The ore deposits are in an area in the Bristol Bay region. How large is the proposed mine site?
Well, we don't know how large the proposed mine site is, and I think that's one of the big points I want to make. Right now, we have a very large prospect of a very attractive prospect located in a very sensitive area, and we realize that. But we have not put forward a proposal at this point, and I think one of the things that really concerns me, both as CEO, but even before I took the job as an Alaskan, of people trying to stop something before there's even a proposal to look at. We've been doing mineral exploration. The minerals are primarily copper, gold, and molybdenum. It could be one of the largest copper mines in the world. Originally, the prospect was sort of on the surface. It was found originally by Cominco. Northern Dynasty, a company out of Vancouver, sort of took over the exploration, expanded the surface mine area a little bit, but then found an even better prospect, which will be ultimately underground. And so we're still doing the geological work on that. We're doing a considerable amount of environmental work, studies on water, fish, wildlife. And at this point, we don't think we'll probably get to the permitting process until at the earliest late in 2009. And that process itself will be another 2 and 3 years.
Do you have an idea of the surface area in acreage, or is that known at all?
No, it depends on how we mine it and what kind of facilities we put up, so I don't.
The area that's being examined, where does it lie in relation to Bristol Bay residents in Dillingham and in Pedro Bay?
Well, it's a little bit north and west of Pedro Bay. The closest village is Iliamna and New Halen, which, of course, is right next to Iliamna. The prospect is loaded north of them, and the other close village is Non-Dalton, and the prospect is east of them. It's about 80 or 90 miles east of Dillingham, Neck, that area. It's at the headwaters of both the Quijac and the Nooshiegak rivers.
Mm-hmm. We're talking on Community Forum today. I'm Lori Townsend, filling in for Nellie Moore, if you're just joining us. And we're talking about the Pebble Mine. Today, where Community Forum has been examining mining issues for the past few weeks. Today we're talking about the Pebble Mine from the perspective of the Pebble Partnership CEO, John Shively. Next week we'll have folks on, or Dr. Bruce Switzer on, who is opposed to the Pebble prospect, the development there. You can join our conversation, and you can do that by calling 550-8433 in the Anchorage area, or if you're out of the area, 1-888-353-5752. And remember that this program repeats at 7 p.m. this evening, but you can't call in then because it's been pre-recorded, which is happening right now. You said that you're not exactly sure how large the deposit is. Is it known? Do you have estimates of how much copper and how much gold might be there?
Yeah, I mean, we have some preliminary estimates. I mean, obviously, until you complete the drilling, it's not clear, but it is substantial. I mean, there could be about 8 billion tons of copper, and another not 8 billion tons. There could be ultimately over 49 billion tons of copper in one of the prospects, and 24 billion pounds of copper, and 26 billion pounds in the other. There also could be a total of about almost 90 million ounces of gold in the prospect. I think that given the area, it's unlikely we will mine all of that, but those are the potential resources. I think one of the things that's probably worth talking about, and it's one of the reasons I took the job. I mean, some of my friends, when I said that I was taking the job, thought I was maybe nuts.
I was going to ask you about that.
Because obviously it is very controversial, and a number of people just don't think that we should even be thinking about the prospect. But I think there are a couple things. First of all, there are not a lot of opportunities in rural Alaska for people. And, of course, we have right now by far the most expensive energy in the country being the cost for that energy being paid for by people in rural Alaska. So if you look at the Red Dog Mine, where over 50% of the employees are NANA shareholders, and you see that there's some opportunity. There's some other prospects of opportunity. Right now, we're doing some work with small village corporations. They do have contracts with us. In addition, we'll have to bring energy into the area. And the energy, in order to make the project economic, is going to have to be relatively inexpensive. And it's our belief that we should, if we're going to bring energy into the region for the mine, then it should be brought for the people of the region. So, I mean, that potentially could have a positive impact. And, you know, at this point, we've set some very high standards for ourselves in terms of the environment. I mean, we've committed to use the very best technology, the very best science, to have maximum protection because of the sensitivity of the area. So the whole issue here is, can we design a mine to protect the fish? Because there's no reason to sacrifice one resource for another. So our goal is to protect the fish. And then when we do that, and you look at the size of the project, the thing, having to build a road, having to bring in power, do we have an economic project? And we don't know whether we do or not.
You're listening to Community Forum on KSKA. I am guest hosting today, Lori Townsend, here with you, filling in for Nellie Moore. John Shively is our guest today. He is the CEO of the Pebble Partnership. And you can join our conversation, if you would like, by calling us here at locally. The number is 550-8433. Or out of the Anchorage area, 1-888-353-5752. I have to kind of turn my head from one direction to the next, so I'm going to look over this way. And we're going to bring Mike on now. Mike is calling with a comment about something about the history of Bonanza Creek. Hi, Mike, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
All right, and what's your comment?
Well, I'm curious about the facts here. As I recall, there was a foreign-owned company came into a tributary of the Yukon River, and they promised a lot of jobs to native people, and they started up a gold mine, and they were using hazardous chemicals like cyanide. And at some point, I think they just abandoned the project, left the site contaminated, and I think someone had to go in and clean it up, and I think it maybe would have been the state of Alaska. I'd like to know the facts there. Who cleaned it up? What was the cost? Was it the state had to pay? And how did a foreign company that promised jobs to native people get away and escape responsibility for that kind of action? And how do we know this won't happen again?
John, are you familiar with...
I'm not familiar with the project, so I really can't comment on that. I do know I was involved. I worked for NANA at the time we developed Red Dog. A big part of the Red Dog project was always to get employment for Native people. Cominco and now Tech Cominco has kept those commitments. My background has largely been in rural Alaska. A lot of my career has been working with rural Alaskans, and I wouldn't be involved in the project if I didn't think that we could provide those jobs and I didn't think we could provide the protections. I think there are issues about the long-term commitments. Those are things that we know we're going to have to make. I think how we make them and how the government structures are questions that are still up in the air. But having a company the size of Anglo American, which is one of the world's largest mining companies involved, I think guarantees that they just can't get up and walk away.
Whenever we mention NANA, we need to, in the interest of sponsorship disclosure, we need to let folks know that KSKA does receive underwriting support from NANA Management Services, which is owned by NANA Development Corporation and Tech Cominco, operators of Pogo and Red Dog Mines, just so folks know that. John, how do the mining operations for the two different types of metals that you'll be... Largely, you're looking for copper and gold in this prospect. How do those mining operations differ? I realize that, and I think we should let folks know that you've only been with Pebble Partnership for a little more than 2 months. So some of this might be questions that we'll have to revisit later on. But do you know how the processes differ mining the two metals?
Well, the mining is all the same because it's in the rock. So basically, and although certainly the technology and environmental aspects of mining have changed a lot in the last two or three decades, and the ability for mining companies to walk away the way they used to doesn't really exist anymore. But what happens is you go in, you take the rock that's there, you blow it up in some kind of way so you get it smaller, and then you bring it to a processing plant where you keep crushing it and then grinding it. So ultimately you get what was originally rock down to something that looks like flour. Then to get the minerals out, a mineral like copper you generally do through flotation, which it mixes with reagents, and then I know it's not intuitive, but the copper concentrate, which is not 100% copper, but it is the majority of the concentrate is copper, floats to the top of the flotation device. You skim that off. And it depends on where you are, what you do with it next. In the case of Red Dog, they dry the concentrate, truck it to a port site where they store it over the winter, and then ship it out in the summer. In our case, the copper concentrate will be mixed with water and shipped via pipeline to a port in Cook Inlet, on the west side of Cook Inlet. We will then dewater the concentrate to get it as dry as possible, and we'll take the water that we take out of there and ship it back to the mine to be reused. The gold processing is still something that we're working on. I mean, people have talked about the fact that very often you use cyanide to get the gold. That is one way of doing it, but it's not the only way of doing it, and we're obviously sensitive to the fact that cyanide is something that is very controversial.
You're listening to Community Forum. I'm Lori Townsend filling in for Nellie Moore. We're talking about the Pebble Mine, and joining us today is Mr. John Shively, who is the CEO of the Pebble Partnership. Next week, Community Forum will be looking at the Pebble Mine from the perspective of Dr. Bruce Switzer, who is an environmental engineer who in the past has worked for mining companies, but who now works for or with the Renewable Resources Coalition and opposes the Pebble Project. That'll be next week. This week we're learning a little bit about Pebble 101, and you can join the conversation if you have questions or comments locally, 550-8433 or out of the Anchorage area, 1-888-353-5752. And we're going to go to Kendra, who has a comment about environmental consultants. Hello, Kendra, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Did you have a question?
I did. I want to say I'm not against any resource extraction. My family, grandfather and father, have both been prominent in oil development in the state. But I've learned that recently that Jane Whitsitt and Charlotte McKay, who were both involved with doing the baseline environmental studies for Pebble, have both joined the Pebble Partnership. And I'm wondering how common it is for people that do the baseline work to join the mining companies, and what this might say about the image of objectivity and reliability of that environmental data.
Well, Jane actually has joined us as a consultant, not as a full-time employee. Charlotte, who has managed these kind of projects before, we did get from one of our consultants. We have a whole variety of consulting firms that, that we use. So hiring one or two people, I don't think, changes what we think about the information. In addition, we're doing several things right now that that really go beyond general compliance. We will have an independent science review of our data and of our processes for collecting it that is outside the traditional government review. We're doing that as part of also an independent stakeholder process that's being run by an organization called Keystone out of Colorado that does these kinds of processes where they try to bring people together to talk about controversial projects. And they will run that, and we will look to the stakeholders to give us advice on how the project ought to be developed. Again, that's outside the sort of general compliance, and part of our commitment to go beyond compliance. In addition, we've been releasing our data. We've had, I think, two data releases so far. We've got another one, I think, that comes out tomorrow, the next day. This, again, is something that no other project that I know has done. Generally, the data comes out when you go to submit your permits, and so we're making that data public. So I really think that people can have confidence in that, you know, what we're doing and what our consultants are doing are going to be looked at by a whole variety of people.
And John, are you doing that because of public perception and concerns that folks have, or why is it you've decided to open the process in this manner?
Well, I think partially because of where the project is situated, partially because it's controversial, but I think that people need to have confidence in what we're doing. I mean, and if people don't have some confidence, we're probably not going to proceed, or we won't be allowed to proceed. So we're willing to take extra steps that I think wouldn't necessarily be important in all projects, but I think is important in a project of both this size and this location.
You're listening to Community Forum. I'm Lori Townsend filling in for Nellie Moore, and John Shively is our guest today. He is the CEO of the Pebble Partnership. We're going to take another call. Robert, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Hi, Robert. What's your question or comment?
Yeah, I have a comment and a question. You know, it sounds to me, I kind of have the same feelings that the previous caller had. You know, you have these two people come in and do consulting work. It's kind of, to me, the proverbial fox hired to care for the chicken coop. That really does concern me. Another thing that concerns me, and I have a question about, is that for some reason the corporation, the Pebble Group, cannot seem to come up with information in terms of the size and the scope of this project. Every project that I'm aware of, that I've read about, has basically met up with nothing but environmental disaster, where you had open pit mines, lots of toxic waste, and you know, Pebble's coming in with lots of money, and it's not coming in from Alaska, it's coming in from out of state, and it's basically stating that, you know, they're trying to do the best that they can to make sure that, you know, the environment is secure, but you know, the fact of the matter is the track record has been dismal. And my concern is that today, as of today, we still don't know the size, the scope of this project. My feeling is that what's going to happen is we're probably going to end up with the absolute largest strip mine pit in America, if not the world. And that really concerns me, and it should concern Pebble, and it should concern you know, the Alaska natives that are going to be affected by this. And yes, it may provide some jobs, it may provide, you know, money for development, but in the end, they're going to be stuck with a big mess. And that's my big concern about it. And I really don't see, you know, how and why at this point, you know, that there isn't any estimation whatsoever as to what the size and scope of this project is going to be. I'll take my answer off the line.
Thank you, Robert. And John, I'm sure you're aware that there has been concern about open pit mining, and certainly there are mines in the past that have left environmental problems. How will this be different? What's being proposed that will be different?
Well, I mean, there's no question that the mining industry has a lot to account for, not only in this country but around the world. And I'm not here to justify that. I do think that things have changed. Certainly environmental protection has changed a great deal. And the requirements that mining companies have to go through have changed a great deal. I understand the frustration of people that, you know, don't know how big we are or what we're going to look like, which is why we're not asking for anybody to support the mine. I mean, it's not that we're out saying, please support the Pebble Mine. What we're saying is, give us a chance to develop something that people can look at. Let people look at how big it might be. Let people look at what the protections might be. Let not only our independent stakeholder process go forward, but the government process, where we have to tell the government how big it's going to be. We have to tell the government what we're going to do with our waste. We have to tell the government what kind of tailings facility we're going to build. You know, and let people judge whether or not we've met the standards we've set for ourselves. And I don't think, you know, every mine has been a disaster. I can take you to mines today where operating mines where the tailings ponds have fish in them. So there have been changes. But we have very high standards to meet, and we recognize that. But before, you know, as we go into permitting, probably even before we get to permitting, people will have a pretty good idea of what the size of our mine is and how we're going to mine that prospect.
All right. Thank you. You're listening to Community Forum. If you've just joined us, I'm filling in today, Lori Townsend, guest hosting for Nellie Moore. You can join the conversation about Pebble Mine. If you have questions or comments, you can call us at 550-8433 or out of the Anchorage area, 1-888-353-5752. You can also email comments to communityforum@kska.org if you would like. Now, the program will repeat tonight at 7 p.m., so if you're not catching all of it right now or you have to leave the car or whatever you're doing in your busy day, you can listen to the program again tonight at 7 p.m., but you will not be able to call in. So now is your chance to call in. And now we're going to hear from Val, who has a comment about bringing energy to Bristol Bay. Val, are you there?
Yes, thank you very much. I had a comment and a question going off of the cliche of killing two birds with one stone. I read an oil blog. It actually came off of an Anchorage Daily News article that referred to this blog where it indicated that the world's population is increasing to the degree that it demands 1 more million barrels of oil per day without even substantial growth. And it, if we all look at exponential curves, it'll just get worse in the future. Given that, and given the assumption that John is going to make sure, which I'm sure he is, that the science of this project will be fail-safe. In other words, they will extract the mineral from the ground and transport it elsewhere safely. And that the fill that gets filled back in that void will be filled with safe material. Given all that assumption, John, would you and could Pebble consider, given our future oil and gas demand, killing two birds with one stone by looking for some fossil fuel opportunity in Bristol Bay or nearby, and perhaps maybe even offer some refinement for Bristol Bay use?
Well, let me... All right, well, thanks. Let me say a couple things about the energy issue. Right now, the one decision we have made is we're not going to use diesel at site to produce the energy. Right now, it looks like we might well try to use imported LNG, liquefied natural gas, and produce the power in Cook Inlet and bring it in over transmission lines. And then if we're going to bring it to the rest of the region, we would hopefully in conjunction with the state, do transmission lines to other parts of the region. In terms of fossil fuels, of course, there are some leases that have been let out in the Bristol Bay area. They've been let to people that actually know how to explore for oil and gas. We're a mining company, so it's really not our skill. We certainly, you know, are talking to these people, but we're also talking to others. I mean, I know the state is in the process of letting some leases on Augustine and other places for potential geothermal development, and we're talking to those people. And as a matter of fact, we gave a small grant to one of the local utilities out in the Bristol Bay region to go look for geothermal in their area. There are some potential for small hydro projects out there. We're doing a wind analysis at the site to see if we can produce some of our power by wind. So, I mean, it's more that aspect that we'll be involved in than the oil and gas development. I think that we certainly can encourage people and certainly could provide a market for some of the product if it's found, but I doubt we will do any of the exploration ourselves.
And John, I wanted to ask about water usage, too. How is it known how much daily water consumption will be needed for the mine when it's in full operation?
It will be known. I mean, right now we're still trying to figure out, you know, how many flotation units, how much concentrate we're going to send over the pipeline, how much water that takes. But obviously, in order to get our permits, we're going to have to tell the government how much water we think we need. We're going to have to tell people what we're going to do with that water, or the government, in order to get our permits. We're certainly going to have to tell the government how we treat any wastewater and what happens to it.
Do you anticipate that you'll be using ocean water, or will it be fresh water that you'll have
we'll
to
be
use?
We'll be using fresh water.
You will.
And it'll probably be a combination of surface and subsurface water.
All right. Well, we're going to now go to Lorraine, who is actually opposed to the mine. Lorraine, are you there?
Yes.
What's your concern?
The company? Someone mentioned that they're from out of state.
Who owns the company?
Yeah.
Pebble Partner.
I'm just confused. I mean, who owns the company that is going to be doing the mining?
Well, the company that's set up to do the mining is called the Pebble Limited Partnership. It right now has two owners. One is Anglo American, which is a large international mining company that's headquartered in London, and the other is Northern Dynasty, which is a smaller mining company that's headquartered in Vancouver. Both of those companies are publicly traded and owned by a whole variety of shareholders, and including, I know, at least with Anglo, it's partly owned by the Alaska Permanent Fund.
And this is Alaska. I'm native, and I'm totally opposed to this. This reminds me of years ago when the oil companies first came to Alaska. And they came to all the villages and promised that there would be jobs for everyone. And I don't know of anyone in my area who works for the oil companies. I mean, they made a lot of promises. And I do not trust the things that are being said right now because of things that have continued to happen. And I do not trust that, you know, there's always a veil in the name of profit, and that's why I don't trust that. I wish I could verbalize myself more, but there has been a lot of trust broken initially with the Native community, but the people who are going to be for this mining project are the ones who are going to gain from it, and they don't care about what's going to happen to the land. That's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you, Lorraine, for your call. And John, what do you think about those concerns?
Certainly the concern. I understand the concern about jobs. I think the you know, one thing I can say about it, as I said earlier, I was involved in helping develop the Red Dog Mine, and providing jobs to natives was a key to that development. It still is a key part of it. It's part of the reason I took this job was because I really believe that if a project like this is going to go forward, the people in the local area have to be part of that. And the whole issue of foreign investment, as a matter of fact, almost all of our economy is based on investment that comes from outside the state. We have very little capital inside the state. So whether it's oil, fish, tourism, I mean, that's where a lot of the capital comes from. People, however, still have a right to be concerned about our commitments, and we expect to be held to them.
And certainly companies, their main focus is profits. That's no secret. That's what they have to do for their shareholders and to keep their businesses thriving. How can folks be reassured of environmental standards? Who will be watchdogging those things?
Well, primarily, of course, that's government's responsibility is to watchdog what we say we're going to do. We believe, at least early on, we're going to have a stakeholder group that will also be looking at our proposals and also looking at that. We're going to be looked at from a variety of ways. I think in this day and age, if you're going to stay in business in resource development, you have to do a good job. I mean, the cost of having to go in and clean up messes bankrupt companies, and so as it should. I mean, there should be a provision. So, I think things have changed, and we certainly believe that there are mines around the world that are certainly owned by Anglo and other companies where we can show how that's changed.
And Lorraine mentioned jobs. Is it known if the mine gets permits and eventually is built, once it's underway, how many jobs would there be there?
We're estimating about 1,000 jobs.
Okay. You're listening to Community Forum. I'm guest host today, Laurie Townsend, filling in for Nellie Moore. And we're talking about the Pebble Mine this week from the perspective of the Pebble Partnership CEO, John Shively. Next week, we'll hear from the opposition to the Pebble Mine, Dr. Bruce Switzer, who is with an environmental engineer with the Renewable Resources Coalition. You can join our conversation at 550-8433 or out of Anchorage 1-888-353-5752. And we're going to hear from Lisa now, who works for Iliamna Development Corporation. Lisa, are you there?
Yeah, good afternoon. How are you?
Fine. Do you have a comment?
Yes, I do. We have a contract with Pebble Limited Partnership, and we do the payroll for them. And they have 77 people that are employed within the Bristol Bay region. And it's not even a mine yet. It's just they're just exploring and doing their feasibility studies. And last week you had Art Hackey. I think he made a comment how the locals are jumping from the rooftop trying to have them help them. Well, Iliamna is not jumping from the rooftop, you know, asking Art or Renewable Resource to come in and help them, because we've had hardships when commercial fishing was dying and we did not have an answer of how we could, you know, address our, you know, how we're going to address our economy in Iliamna and in the area. So this has definitely been a positive boost for the economy there in Iliamna and within the region, I think. And so I think Pebble Limited Partnership has, you know, been doing good and trying to be a good neighbor. So that's my comment.
And you live in Iliamna?
No, I don't. I work out of Anchorage, and I grew up in Iliamna, and all my family lives there.
Okay. And how about your family members? Have you heard from them about it?
Yes, they're all on the boards that work with Pebble Limited Partnership.
All right. Well, thank you, Lisa, for your call. And I think we'll take another call. We've got a lot of interest in this program today, not surprisingly. We're going to hear now from Kevin, who has a comment about the release of environmental data by Pebble. Kevin, are you there?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Oh, sorry, I'll talk a little softer. I noticed that the Pebble Limited Partnership has been releasing environmental data to the public, even though a mining plan is not yet complete, which is certainly plaudible and perhaps even unprecedented for a prospect in this stage. And my question to Mr. Shively is, what prompted the Pebble Limited Partnership to take these steps towards transparency and releasing the environmental data to the public at this stage?
Well, we were getting a lot of questions about the data, and people were accusing us of hiding the data, and which we weren't. We were doing what people traditionally do, which is collect the data in order to put it into our engineering process, our planning process, and then it would have all been released, of course, when we submitted our permits. That's the traditional way. But people were concerned about it and thought we had something to hide. So in order to show them that we don't, we've started releasing the data. I mean, and there's a lot of it. We've been out there for over 4 to 5 years collecting everything from, precipitation to information on groundwater, microorganisms. And we decided not to release it all at once because we thought it would just be too overwhelming. So we have a whole plan, which we've given to the public, that will release the data that we started a couple months ago, and it'll go through the end of this year and then to the end of next year.
Excellent. And if I'm not mistaken, there's a schedule already in place for the release of the remainder of the data. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks, Kevin. We had a comment, an email comment, actually. I've been giving out the numbers, but only gave out the email address once, communityforum@ksk.org. And we had an email comment along the lines of one of my next questions, actually, looking at the area in terms of the water resources there. Certainly, as you're well aware, there's a lot of concern about the Nooshigak and the Quijack Rivers, and there's other numerous streams and a lot of wetlands in the area, and this is a large project. There's a comment, an email comment, about some reports about mining in the western U.S., regarding acid mine drainage from sulfide rock. And Dr. Zamzo, I hope I'm pronouncing your name correctly, is asking, considering that Pebble has sulfide rock and significant surface and groundwater, how will Pebble Mine be developed so water is not impacted?
Well, anything that's not just sulfur that's a problem, there could be other problems. I mean, obviously, we have to prove to the government and the public if there's anything that doesn't belong in the water and the watershed, it can't get there. I mean, and there is technology to do that. I'm familiar with some of it, the work I did in the cruise industry where we changed the water treatment systems on the ships. It is our responsibility to show that nothing that doesn't belong in the watershed gets there, and that's our intent to do that.
All right, and now let's go back to the phone lines, which are full of callers waiting to talk to you, Mr. Shively. We're going to hear from Dee now. Dee, are you there?
Yes, I am. Thanks for taking my call. I'm really calling in with a couple of comments. First, my thanks to Community Forum for doing in-depth shows on Pebble. This is the third show I've caught, and they have been very informative. But I do have a request that future shows include representatives from opposing positions on mining, in this case Pebble. I think the public has a need to hear experts debate the issues. Otherwise, one side has a relatively uncontested platform for presenting its own point of view, and it makes it more difficult for us as citizens to get our questions thoroughly answered. I think this is especially important because the issues are technical and specialized, and it would be more informative to get both points of view on the same show. But again, thanks for covering this issue. I just hope that you'll consider changing your format for future shows. And I did want to respond to something Mr. Shively said about companies today not being able to, in other words, do bad mining, that they need to take environmental standards very seriously so as not to get bankrupt from the cleanup that would occur. I think actually, the Government Accountability Office has dedicated a report to strategies that mining companies use to sidestep the environmental cleanups, one being that they transfer their assets to parent companies so that the local companies really don't have the resources to do cleanups. So I think that what we've seen is that the state and the federal government get stuck with cleanups, and this is to the detriment of citizens. And so I think that, you know, I would like to hear what Mr. Shively, you know, says to this point of view.
Thank you for your comments. And this kind of goes hand in hand with an email comment that we just got in also, John, that someone asking, won't Pebble be required to post some kind of bond to ensure shutdown and cleanup costs? How will that be dealt with?
And again, that's something we're going to have to work out with the government. I think currently probably the way, and being a little bit familiar with the state's bonding program from being commissioner, I don't think that the current limitations maybe for a mine this size are sufficient. And so we're going to have to look at ways to increase that. I certainly don't think that the government's going to allow us to get away with putting up a shell corporation and saying that's the corporation's going to clean up. The other thing is there's going to have to be monitoring of this mine long after it's shut down. So how do you put the funds, how do you make funds available and ensure that that's going to happen? To be frank, I'm a little concerned that, you know, if you give funds to government, that they're there when they're needed. So we're right now talking to the government officials, and part of our plan will be how all of that works. But it is important, and we know that, you know, if we can't show it, that there's somebody there with the capacity to do the closure, to do the reclamation, and to do the monitoring, that we're not going to get permitted.
How will that be determined, what it will take to do that monitoring, reclamation, and long-term supervision of streams and making sure that things aren't leaking?
Well, we'll make the proposals as to how we're going to do that when we make our request for permits. Now, to be perfectly frank, all we can do is make the best guess right now, given the size of the mine, of what might take place. As we get closer to mine shutdown, which could be 50 years, it could be longer, then obviously as you get closer, you have to have your reclamation plan more and more specific. In addition, of course, over that kind of time period, technology is going to change. So a technology that we may think is the best today might not be the best 40 or 50 years from now. So those things need to be taken into account as the mine gets close to shutdown.
You're listening to Community Forum on KSKA. We're talking about the Pebble Mine prospect today from the perspective of CEO John Shively with the Pebble Partnership. Next week, the show will be about the opposition to the Pebble prospect. I'm Lori Townsend, filling in for Nellie Moore, and we're going to take a call now from Trish. Hi, Trish. Are you there?
Yes, thank you. I had a question I haven't heard addressed in the past, and that is if the state took measures to stop development of the mine, is there an obligation on the state's part to buy back the leases or compensate in some way? And if so, what would that involve? Thanks.
Well, Trish, fortunately for me, I'm not a lawyer, and you've asked a lawyer's question. We have no guarantee that we can mine. We have mining leases, and we have the right to go out and explore. We have the right to make a proposal to the state, and the state and federal agencies have the right not to grant us permits. So if we couldn't proceed because the permitting process said that we weren't entitled to the permits, I don't think there's any obligation at all to the state. Now, if the state tomorrow came and said, we've decided we don't want you to do anything anymore and we're taking those leases back so that you stop work immediately, or they did it next year, then there could be a taking, as there was with the oil leases originally in Bristol Bay, and then there might be compensation. So the answer to your question really depends on, without being a lawyer, on how the state made their decision.
Does that answer your question, Trish?
Yeah, thanks.
All right. Thank you for the call. John, some people are concerned about Anglo-Americans' reputation in other countries in parts of the world where they're mining. Why have you decided to attach your name and reputation to this company? What do you know about them that has convinced you that the Pebble prospect will be handled in a smart way?
Well, I think the first thing that impressed me was when Cynthia Carroll, who's now the CEO of Anglo-American, came to speak in Alaska last fall. First of all, to find a woman as a CEO of a mining company is pretty, well, I don't think it's rare, it's unique. And she's a very impressive woman. And she has some ideas about what needs to be done socially and environmentally, I think, that are different maybe than other people in the past have come. And also in safety. She recently, a mine they have in South Africa that had safety issues where there were actual workers' deaths, she shut the mine down and said, you've got to go, you've got to get your training, you've got to get people trained before you open that mine back up. Anglo has had some, I think, tremendous successes. I mean, there are places in Africa where they've had to relocate villages, but I've looked at the housing they've built. They've built schools. They've built clinics. They have a whole program, a social economic analysis program, where they go in to try to see what they can do not only to develop local businesses that might serve the mine, but look at the area overall as to what can be done to make the economy sustainable over time, because everybody knows that mining, you know, doesn't last forever. I mean, sometimes it lasts for a very long time. So what other things can you do in the community that develops skills and capability that helps them over the long run? And I think that those kinds of tools and that kind of attitude, to me, was a major part of that, and the fact that they have the resources to do it was a major reason that I felt that this job was worth taking on and the challenge was worth taking on.
All right. Well, let's take another caller. Ernest has a question or maybe a comment about lobbying. Ernest, are you there?
Yes. My question is, how much is Anglo American and the other Vancouver-based company putting into lobbying at this time? And what, as the process, permitting process goes forward, how much money and how many lobbyists are they going to be employing after that? What other resources are they going to use to put pressure on our state officials? And the comment at the end would be, I don't trust my government to do the right thing, especially when government is so compromised by the use of these multi-corporations and their vast amounts of resources to influence the process. I believe that it can be done responsibly, but I believe if we leave it up to American or the Vancouver-based company, which I just don't remember what he said it was, I just don't believe leaving it up to somebody, their sole purpose for existing is the profit, bringing profit to their shareholders. Therefore, questions are very pertinent. I'd like to, if you do not have those answers now, I wish you could get that kind of information out to the public. Thank you. Yeah. I'll take my answer off the air.
Sure. And I don't have the exact figures right now, but they're available. Every dime that we spend on lobbying, you can go to the Alaska Public Offices Commission, and there's a report. We have to make it quarterly, and you can see how much money we're spending. In terms of his question about, you know, are we thinking about changing that in the future and upping it once the permitting process we have not budgeted for the future, but I don't see lobbying as a way to get permits. In fact, my experience in government would show me if you want to use lobbyists to try to get your permits, you're probably not going to get them. If our science doesn't speak for itself, it's just not going to work.
You wrote an article about a social license. Can you talk a little bit about what you meant by that?
Yeah, this was before I took the job. It was based on a talk that I gave at the Miners Association when I still worked for Holland America. And it's this whole issue of social license that I think has become much more to the forefront. I mean, in the old days, it was basically a license to mine. You know, do you think you can get the minerals out of the ground economically and meet whatever requirements that government might put on you? But today, I think there's a much broader issue, and what I call the social license is the support of people, of people that, particularly of people that are close to the area, that people live near the area, but people in the state that say, look, we've looked at this project and we think it can be done responsibly. I think you have to have that. Now, it's not a piece of paper. It's not a process that, you know, or it can be part of a process, but it's something you have to take into account. And there were times when research development companies ran right over the top of people, but I believe those days are over. And if you don't get get your social license, I don't think you're going to get your government permits.
All right, you're listening to Community Forum. We're talking about the Pebble Mine. I'm Lori Townsend, filling in for Nellie Moore. This week we're looking at the Pebble Mine from the perspective of the management of the prospect, the Pebble Mine prospect. John Shively is CEO of the Pebble Partnership. Next week we'll look at the oppositional side of the mining prospect. And if you're listening in the evening when the show is rebroadcast at 7 p.m., you can't call in because we're not here. We're at home, just like you. But you can call in now, and we're going to take a few callers before we wrap up the show at the end of the day. I have a lot of questions myself yet, but it's not about me. So let's go to the phone lines, and we'll hear from Gail.
Good afternoon, John. I would just like to reiterate something John said earlier about the changes in the philosophy of mining today versus 50 years ago or 100 years ago. I wanted to share this little bit of information. I had an opportunity recently to visit Gibraltar Mine in British Columbia. That's a mine that is owned and run by one of the partners of the Pebble Partnership. That mine has been in operation for over 20 years, and it was a very, very well-run operation. In fact, the reclamation work that they were doing ongoing, there were huge cattle fields grazing on the recreation on the lands that had already been reclaimed. Many people were fishing, both commercially and recreationally, in the Fraser River, which was about 6 miles away from that mine site. And the fishing has been successful for all these years and will continue to be successful because of the operation they put into place to keep the environment protected and keep the Fraser River safe. There was a tourist resort, a huge tourist resort, about a mile away from the Gibraltar mine, and it was bringing in a lot of revenue and a lot of people into that area that were interested in seeing how a mine could be operated successfully and it could be done right. So when people use scare tactics of mining operations that were in existence 50 years ago or 100 years ago, I think they need to stop and look at the changes that the mining industry has put into place and the way we operate mines in Alaska today. And I just wanted to share that information with folks. Thanks.
I should have asked her before she left, is the Gibraltar mine a gold and copper mine? Do we know what was
mined? It's copper,
there?
I believe. All right. I've not been there, but I think it's copper.
All right, so a successful reclamation project from Gail's perspective. Let's hear from Don now. Don, are you there?
Yes, hi. I had a question for Mr. Shively. I read recently in a report that the Fairbanks North Star Bureau receives approximately $3 billion in taxes from the Fort Knox mine, and I was curious if you have a projected estimate of what the economic opportunity would be for the Bristol Bay region if the Pebble project is to go forward, and I'd appreciate an answer. Thank you.
Sure. Well, again, because we don't know exactly how much we're going to be mining, and of course there are other economic issues about pricing that we have to look at. I don't have an exact figure, but we are working with the Lake and Peninsula Borough on how to do taxes, and also with the state. There are certainly tens of millions of dollars of taxes that are going to come out of this, both locally. I mean, one of the biggest taxes for local people is a property tax, or if they do it the way they've done it in the Northwest Arctic Borough, a payment in lieu of taxes. And we recognize that, again, to go back to Lori's question on social license, if we're going to get a social license, one of the things we have to do is help provide the kind of governmental services that are needed in that area. Education is a big part of it, and that's what local government provides. And it's on our interest to have the best local education system possible because we want to recruit our workers from there. I can't give you an exact figure, but it certainly will be in the millions, and my guess is ultimately in the tens of millions of dollars that we'll be paying probably annually.
All right. Let's hear now from Craig, who says he's opposed to the Pebble Project. Craig, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. No, I'm not opposed to it at all. Your screener, I think, might have misunderstood.
Oh, sorry about that.
I just wanted to respond to... one of the gentlemen earlier, and it seems to be using this broad brush anecdotal approach to the horrors of mining. And And I understand people's concern, and everybody should have their perspective and their opportunity to speak, but how many people who are opposed or are even concerned about the mind have real and personal knowledge as opposed to, you know, hearsay or anecdotal stuff? I'm in Anchorage right now, but I live in McGrath. One good case in point, similar to what that lady who called a few minutes ago, how many people have ever taken the time to go up to the Valdez Creek mine and look at the wonderful reclamation job that was done there during operation, and it continues. They literally moved the creek to mine under it and returned it back to its original place. The fish and habitat was undamaged, so it's really not a new or an undoable thing to do economic mining and do it right. And that's another thing. A couple of people talked about the jobs. It's like any job, qualified people have to apply and then do those jobs. I mean, you can't just let anybody fly an airplane, and everybody can't work in a mine either. So everybody in Alaska is not going to get to work there, but there will be Alaskans working there, just like there are out of McGrath. And then finally, the issue about profit. I mean, that's why people go to work every day, to make a profit. So should we infer then that everybody that goes to work is doing a lousy job because really they're only going there to make money? And so I guess my point or comment is we need a reasonable approach to whether or not something's good, and rather than just, you know, making broad brush remarks and saying things that you may not really be knowledgeable about. And thanks for taking my call.
Thanks, Craig. I guess he's just encouraging people to do more research and find out more. And that's always a fine idea with any issue. Let's hear from Nikos, who has comments about health impacts. Nikos, are you there?
Yes. Thank you for having me on the show.
Sure, it'll have to be quick because we're running out of time. So okay. Make your comments succinct.
Well, in particular, I'm concerned about human health impacts, especially to traditional subsistence communities. I just wanted to know what the process is for including the tribes and communities that would be affected and the subsistence fishing people. Does Mr. Shively think that their cooperation and involvement in the permitting process has been sufficient? Also, there's a lot of alarming human rights reports about the Anglo-American conglomerate in the Republic of Congo and a lot of human rights atrocities associated with other parts of Anglo-America. And I'm wondering if he's aware of those.
Well, I'm not aware, to answer the second question, I'm not aware of any of the atrocities. I know there have been human rights issues, but I don't know of any atrocities. And some of that has to do when communities move, and in many cases, people do move, but not everybody wants to move. In terms of working with the tribes, we're regularly meeting with tribal governments, with local native corporations, with other governments, but we're not in the permitting process. So I have to say that, you know, I can't say that they've been involved enough in the permitting process, but we recognize that they have to be partners with this.
All right. Thank you, John Shively, CEO of Pebble Partnership. Next week, we will, Community Forum, I won't be, Nellie Moore will be back. And she'll be talking with environmental engineer Bruce Switzer, who is with the Renewable Resources Coalition and opposes Pebble development. Thank you to all who called in. Sorry we didn't get to all the calls. There's still a lot of folks out there, and we appreciate your participation. And be sure to join in next week, and we can get your calls heard at that time. Thank you.
Community Forum is a production of KSKA's News and Public Affairs Department. If you have questions or comments concerning this program, write to us, KSKA 3877 University Drive, Anchorage, Alaska 99508, or email us at communityforum@ksKA.org. Additional information on today's show topic, including relevant website links, will be posted along with audio of today's program on our website at ksKA.org/communityforum. CD copies can be purchased by calling 550-8400 during regular business hours. This is KSKA, Anchorage.